Well, we have 9 more holes to go, so how about you two fellas follow me to the 10th tee?
On to the back nine, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of Hall of Famer Billy Casper.
2 players down the middle on the 10th hole.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Thank you very much, and welcome into the back nine, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio. Brian Taylor, Bob Casper. At Real Golf is where you can find us on X. Join the conversation. And be sure, if you missed any part of the show, we get that digital stuff. You can download Real Golf Radio wherever your favorite podcast is found. Just search for Real Golf Radio, or at Real Golf is where you can find us. We got a good hour for you here on the back nine. We're going to have a little caddy talk with America's favorite caddy. Oh my gosh. He takes a... this guy. You know, we love him, but sometimes his mind, it just goes. It just goes places, and you got to shut it down.
Well, and that's what's fun about the caddy is, you know, the interaction between us and him. You know, we've known him for quite a while. You know, we talk to him all the time. We text back and forth. We send Instagrams to each other, you know, and text back and forth while we're watching golf tournaments and everything. Caddy's awesome, and we love having him on the show every week.
Yeah, he's going to give us some thoughts on the players, because he and his player won the Players' Championship.
Yep.
Ah,
that is true.
Hey, if you're tuning in here to 2005, if you want to look it up. By the way, we dropped, was it in hour one? I can't remember now. Or was it in the caddy conversation where we dropped a player that was a surprise winner of the Players, and that was Craig Perks.
Yes, Craig Perks.
Yeah. I believe he chipped in a couple of times
to
win that one. The defending champ of the Players next week is one Scottie Scheffler, who's number one in the world and who is trying a new putter this week out at Bay Hill. And he's gone with that new spider. Well, not new, but he's gone with us, new to him, the spider putter from TaylorMade.
Yeah.
Of course, he's a TaylorMade staffer, and he's given that a shot. And look, I'm all about it. I don't mind. If you feel like you can, you know, use the extra effort, why not? And
there's one more thing he's also doing is he doesn't have a line on his golf ball anymore to line up for putting. He's only using the line on the putter. That way he can be more creative or be more touch and feel on the greens.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. So you've got lines to help line you up, but then you've got the idea that no lines will allow you to be creative and get it into the hole creatively. Okay. Yeah.
Just use the face.
Okay. Well, all right. I guess it is what it is. Hey, we got to take a short break. We'll come back. Stay tuned. The caddy joins us next right here on Real Golf Radio.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio, Brian Taylor, Bob Casper, and it's time for America's favorite caddy.
There are bag rats, and then there are caddies.
Baby.
Pro jocks who are legends in caddy shacks across the PGA Tour.
While we can neither confirm nor deny the existence of this legendary looper,
here he is, the caddy on Real Golf Radio.
Yeah, the caddy joins us each and every week right here on Real Golf Radio. Caddy, what is up?
Well, it's a cold morning here in Denver, Colorado. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just not right. Yeah.
It happens. It's springtime in the Rockies, man. One day it's snowing, the next day you're golfing. It just happens.
Crazy. Whew.
By the way, I think, did you like my intro there? I think I kind of, that was like almost my best Jim Rome there. What is up? Caddy, what is up? That's not even a good Jim Rome.
No, it's not.
I don't watch Jim Rome hardly at all. I certainly am familiar with him and his clones. But, you know, I'm not a big roamer. Is that what you call it, roamer?
No, just a clone. That's it. If you're
just a clone.
Sounds like the caddy's on his way to lunch, maybe.
Maybe?
Yeah.
Connect to Apple CarPlay. There we go. How about that?
Hey, you did it.
Okay.
Am I going to start having these issues now that I've turned 50? I'm going to start having trouble like connecting with my car and dealing with technology and such?
Oh, yeah. You're way too old.
You guys
have been. Yeah, he is, isn't he? It's all the younger generation, and Brian's not considered that anymore.
If you got a four in front of that year, you're too old.
Mm.
It's over.
And yep. If you've got a five, then you're really down the hill.
Let's go. My favorite text that I got yesterday was, "Welcome to the senior tour, BT."
And for those of you who don't know, Brian Taylor, my co-host, turned 50 yesterday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Oh,
Eddie.
Boy.
Thank you.
He turned in 50? Did you break 100?
Yeah, I was starting to think. It's like that really isn't a good golf number, is it? There's no good 50 golf number.
How about 50 Tommy wins on Fleetwood?
Tour. I told you guys.
50 wins on tour. Billy Casper, 51.
Yeah, 52.
50, yep. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
When is let's compare that. Rory McIlroy has, 23 wins?
23, yeah. 24, something like that.
I mean, he's got to repeat his career, basically. Now, granted, he does have four majors, right? But
yeah, my dad had three.
Your dad had three. So he has to repeat his career to not catch your dad for tour victory. That's how many. Right. I mean, what's your dad? Fourth all time? Fifth all time? He's got to
be. No, seventh. Seventh.
Seventh all time, really?
Seventh in career wins. Yeah.
Hmm. That's a lot of wins.
Should be tied for six with Byron Nelson. But they took away his Havana win.
Havana in Cuba.
Well, I know they messed around with a lot of Sam Snead's wins, too.
They did, yep.
I like it when Jack, they'd interview Jack when he got a little older in his late 30s and 40s, and they'd be bringing up him winning this or that. He goes, he'd always say, like, "I really can't remember." And I'm thinking, you know you've won a lot when you're not yet 50 years old and you can't remember some of your wins. That's a sign that you're really good. You know what? I don't remember winning that, but I'm glad you reminded me. Okay.
Hey, Caddy. What's the saying?
Yeah.
What's the saying? You're not a tour player unless you don't remember how many times you've broken 67.
I thought he said how many times you shot 63 or better.
Oh, 63, 64, something like that.
I would say, I would wager that on the PGA Tour, guys do not know how many competitive rounds they've shot 66 or better in.
Oh.
I think the guys at the top end were going 63 or better. Like if you're a top 30 guy, there's no way you know how many times you shot 63 or better in competition. I can tell you, guy I caddied for a lot, I don't think he could tell you how many times he shot 62 or better in competition. That's crazy. That's how good they are. That good. They just are that good.
That's awesome.
Yep.
How about 59? Yep. Does your player know how many times he shot 59?
My player shot 59 in a pro-am and changed putters the next day for the first round.
That's brain damage right there.
I mean, he said, I just didn't like the way it felt. And he three putted the very first hole of the tournament. Yep.
With the new putter.
With the new putter, of course. 59 and changed putters. That shows you how the mental stability of professional golfers, it just doesn't exist.
And you couldn't put an axe to that? You couldn't put a stop on that and say, wait a second.
I was not caddying for him at the time. This is a story he relayed to me. So Robert Zielinski, good guy, he was caddying. And the player said when he hits his first putt, 6 feet by from 20 feet, he looked over and Robert's sitting on the bag with his head in his hands. And he said, man, there was a lot of pressure on that 6-footer and I missed it. Yep.
All right.
Spectacular.
So, that's a good segue into Scottie Scheffler. He went to the TaylorMade Spider putter this week. He switched putters.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I mean, there's very few guys who didn't switch putters during their career. Ben Crenshaw would come to mind. I don't think Ben switched putters. He might have thrown Little Ben a few times, but
Little never Ben.
Injured him, so,
yeah, Little Ben.
The name of his putter.
Little Ben. Little Ben. Really?
That's what he called his putter.
That's awesome.
He's an 8802.
Was that an 8802? Yeah, that was. Bob, you know, I never had an 8802. I always wanted one, and I never had one growing up.
Oh, I did.
That was the.
I had a couple of them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you were a little more privileged than me. So, that's all I'm saying.
I just wrote that down. Caddy's wish list, an 8802 putter.
Well, way back when, yeah.
But you don't want one.
Those are beautiful putters.
So if we came up with an 8802 now, you wouldn't be as excited?
Oh, I'd be happy to have one, but I'm not actively seeking a relationship right now. So there you go.
So speaking of those putters, TaylorMade set in 5 different putters.
Really?
All half inch longer. And I guess the one he's playing with this week has a pistol grip. So it's gone. He's gone away from the bigger grip that most guys use, or a lot of guys are using. So this is like totally brand new, totally off the chart.
Well, I mean, why not, right? We've talked about Scottie Scheffler and his statistics everywhere but the putter are off the hook, right? I mean, he's number one in the world for his ball striking, and yet he seems to be struggling with the putter. So if you've got the entire golf industry at your disposal, man, send some putters. Let's go. Let's find something. I don't care if we switch weekly. If it's feeling good, we're rocking, baby. Let's go.
So if Scottie's putted with a certain kind of putter most of his career, here's what's going to happen. He's going to change to something else. He'll do it for a while. He may have a win. He may have a couple wins with it, but he will go back to the original putter.
Caddy's calling.
Everybody goes back. Everybody goes home eventually.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need a break from your partner. And you got to kind of rejuvenate. And did I say partner? I meant putter.
Yes, right. I was gonna say. Just disclaimer: this is not marriage advice from the caddy. Just saying.
Maybe that was a Freudian slip, a caddian slip. I don't know. What do we call that? A Bagger-Vancian slip? Anyway,
Bagger.
Someone very wise once said, "Yeah, you got to put that putter down sometimes and put it in its place and make it understand it's not the boss and it can be replaced, even though it can, but make it think it can." Right, then it'll behave better. Putters they may not be inanimate objects, right? I mean, yeah.
And at the same time,
didn't Speed sleep with his putter? Didn't Speed say he slept with his putter sometimes?
Oh, I don't know.
Think legit. I'm not making this up. I think legit. Didn't I hear that somewhere?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, did it have like? Did it complain if he grab the covers?
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Anyway. Hey, so on the same subject, Caddy, do you see his mind? I can't even imagine when he was sitting in a caddy, like in a caddy barn back in the day. Like he had an hour to kill. What's just like how the different, like if you were to spider graph his thoughts, like how far off in left field would you be before you actually came to anything?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Oh, my.
Hey, I want...
I don't know. Caddy doesn't think outside the box. He's not even in the same room as the box. It's a
there is no box in the caddy's life.
There's no box. Phil looks at me like, "Wow, you're thinking weird, dude." I mean, that's pretty scary, right?
Yeah,
Phil thinks you're thinking weird.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, on that, Caddy, we're gonna take a quick break. More with the Caddy coming up next, right here on Real Golf Radio.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Talking golf with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
One day you'll get it.
Here's Brian and Bob.
Welcome back to the show, Brian Taylor, Bob Casper, and America's favorite caddy, picking up where we left off. So you guys already gave me the birthday thing. I got a new set of irons. That's the big thing. So the new Apex Pro irons with the new Fujikura shafts in them, the new iron shafts, the Axioms. So it's basically the same iron I've been playing. I played the 2019s, I played the 2021s, and now the 24 version, but this is definitely a new shaft. Haven't hit them yet, so I'm excited. So tell me, what's your thoughts about a new set of irons? Because they're shiny, they're sitting right here in the closet, and they're just begging to be hit right now.
Yeah, it's a little bit like getting a new car. That first nick really gets to you, but after a little bit of, weathering, it's okay and it doesn't bother you anymore. But yeah, that first, the first nick on those new irons will bother you a little bit. So you got to get over that.
I think
irons wear out. I think irons wear out. I think you have to, you know, guys change wedges. Didn't VJ change wedges like every week or something?
Every week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Every week.
Wow. Yeah. Yep.
But
new set of wedges.
How many people hit 7,000 wedges a week though? So, yeah,
you got a point.
Gotta consider that. Right. No, the new clubs, Brian. I remember my first set of shiny new clubs when I was about 14 years old. They were, I think they were Gregor MTs. Can't remember exactly what they were, but boy, they looked good. And oh man, yeah. Sweet getting a new set of clubs.
Do you like the way they hit?
Do I? Are you asking me or are you asking Caddy?
No, I'm talking to Caddy. Oh. Asking him if he liked the way his MPs hit.
Yeah.
Gregor's.
So here's the thing about the Caddy. When I was most of my golfing life until I started kind of not playing anymore, I hit it solid a lot. I didn't tend to miss the sweet spot. Like I have the little dime size wear out in my old clubs from back when I was playing junior, and I wasn't a very good player, but man, I hit it solid most of the time. I don't know. I don't anymore. I need the big face now with a lot of forgiveness. I'm sure I love them. I'm sure they felt good. Everything feels good when you hit it dead center. Right.
You know, you were just saying that dime spot. I can remember seeing my dad's set of irons from his first 13 years on tour. He never changed his irons, only changed the grips.
Wow.
And those were leather and they had to put them on, wrap them on. But his Wilson staff irons from his first 13 years on tour had dime spots on every single one of them. And that was the set of irons he made his first $1 million with. Took him 13 years.
Yeah, that's impressive. I heard that probably back then you're not going to change irons as much because they couldn't match them as well. The shafts were probably all different. Everything was different. So there's that story about Bobby Jones. They said they checked his clubs out and specced them and weighed them and all that. And he had a smorgasbord of different clubs and apparently they all matched really well. He just did it by feel. And your dad probably did the same thing.
Yeah,
I guess. And it's a different world, you know, but boy, the dime size wear out. Yeah. I wonder though, do you think the new clubs with the more forgiving faces and especially the big headed drivers, they probably don't teach you to hit the sweet spot as well because you just don't have to anymore. So that's another reason you can develop speed now that you couldn't develop then.
Right.
Because you have to put the club head on the ball more accurately with the old equipment. It's that simple.
I agree, Caddy. 100%.
So what's the key to breaking in a new set of irons? Do you just take them out and play, or do you hit balls with them? Do you kind of start, you know, playing a few rounds, but you stick with your gamers for a while, or do you just cold turkey, you're going unless they don't feel good?
15 or 20 with each club, right, Caddy?
Yeah, I think if you're talking about breaking in a new set of irons, we need to get to Terrell Hatton on the show to tell us how to do that.
Oh, okay. Let's see what he did there.
Right? Hey, he's the guy. He's the guy. No, it's cold turkey. Just put him in the bag and go. I mean, come on. Let's go. Just fire it up. Jump right in. Deep end of the pool. Cold water. Dive in. You don't dip your toe in cold water. You dive in. Let's go.
All right. Besides that, you got to enjoy the honeymoon phase. So you put them in there and you know you're going to shoot a good score because you're just so excited to hit each one of those irons. They're going to be good.
I think they're going to feel better, right? They're just going to feel better. But look, there's probably something to be said about the faces grabbing the ball a little better than the older clubs. They're not, that's why VJ's changing wedges, right? It's wearing out a little bit. And there's probably a little less friction when you hit the ball and who knows, do the shafts fatigue over time? I don't know.
Maybe
you got to be Ray Floyd who could apparently tell the difference of two swing weights if you handed him a club. Maybe you need that crazy feel to understand an effect like that, but I don't know. It's mental too, right? It's not that golf's a mental game at all, but
right.
If it was, right, you just go out there and maybe you just feel better with them in your hands and you hit it better because you feel better. I mean, that's a huge part of the game anyway.
Hey, Caddy, before we let you go, next week it's the Players, and I know this is a special one. This was one of the signature wins that you had as a caddy. Just give us a little preview. What are your thoughts when you think about the Players?
A major without being called a major is my first thought. It's the fifth major. I felt like that before I had a Players Championship flag on the wall. But, I'll tell you what I really like about that golf course is anybody can win on it. It doesn't necessarily favor long hitters or short hitters. It allows anybody to win. Look at the list of champions. The even cooler thing is, and it's a testament to the design, the way the officials set it up, it's more often than not the best ball striker wins that tournament, and the Players love that. They love being rewarded for hitting the ball really well because that's the hardest thing to do in golf. Everybody, it's why people say, well, I played really well, but I didn't score well. Okay, what does played really well mean? Well, that's equal to I hit the ball really well. And that's what everybody loves most of all. So it rewards that kind of stuff. Look who won it last year.
Scottie Scheffler.
Best ball strikers. Best ball striker.
One by five.
That's often the case.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. He dominated. Yeah, so that's the case. And what an exciting place. I mean, the finish, 16, 17, and 18. People have different opinions about 17, but you can't get away from how crazy exciting that finish is and how stressful it is as a player to come to that little gauntlet to finish it off. I mean, that really tests your metal. Is that how you say that? Metal?
I don't know. Metal.
Anyway,
yep.
It tests it. Yep.
I love it. And before I let you go, the Masters countdown is on, and I brought out my Masters cup. I still have a collection of these, you know, like souvenir cups that you get when you get a soda or something. And this one happens to be 2009. Oh, I know. I almost hesitate. I almost hesitated to do it, but I'd really just, man, that was so exciting for so long with Kenny Perry. Just needed a par on one of the last two holes in regulation. And it would have been one of the more popular, I think, Masters victories. Instead, it was El Pato in a playoff.
Yeah, and I saw him last week in Morocco.
You did.
I did.
Which means we can probably expect to see him at Augusta again this year.
I agree. Yeah, he'll be there.
That guy is so powerful swinging a golf club. If you haven't, you need to go see him in person. And he probably, how old is he now? Is he 52?
Yeah, 51 or 52. Yep.
I bet even now, Bob, did you see him hit any balls last week?
I did not.
I bet he hasn't lost a step. I mean, that guy, man, he was a powerful swinger of the club. Whew. Gotta go watch it. Gotta see that in person.
Okay.
For sure.
We'll report back in just a few weeks. Caddy, thanks so much for taking the time, man. Always good to talk golf with you, buddy.
Thank you, gentlemen.
There you go. That's the caddy. We'll be talking more on the Players next week. He has a Players, winner's player flag hanging up on his wall as he caddied for the winner of the Players back in the day. Stay tuned. More of the show continues next.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Welcome back to Real Golf Radio, brought to you in part by Black Desert Resort in St. George, Utah. Check out blackdesertresort.com and find out about the new Tom Weisskopf Design Championship Golf Course, which will host the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup Fall Series event coming up October 10th through the 13th in St. George, Utah. It is open to play. You can book online at blackdesertresort.com. Also find out about exclusive real estate opportunities available at blackdesertresort.com. They currently are selling the Family Village units that surround the water park. Yes, there's going to be a water park that is going to be unbelievable. So you got this unbelievable golf course. You got this really super cool water park, Lazy River, Rapid River. You've got surf wave pools, palm trees, splash pads, the whole nine yards, right? It's going to be an epic scene. Plus inside Resort Center Hotel, you've got an amazing basalt steakhouse is what it's going to be called on the top floor with panoramic views of Snow Canyon and the surrounding mountains. And then on the bottom, you got another restaurant. You've got a 15,000 square foot spa, 25,000 square feet of meeting and convention space, pickleball court. I mean, there's going to be a promenade there with shopping and dining. The whole place is going to be just the base camp where you're going to want to. It's a destination place in southern Utah that happens to feature a tremendous golf course, which was rated number two by Golf Digest, new golf course, best new golf course in America this year. And it'll even be better than that. So you got to check it out at blackdesertresort.com. Does that get you excited, Bob?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
It's phenomenal. And the new caddy program is starting up later this month.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if you're not an owner, you'll be required to take a caddy with you, which will help because the first time you play it, there are a couple lines off the tee that are not quite clear. Let's put it that way. So the caddy will be able to steer you down in the right spots and help you with a few other miscellaneous things out there. So they hired the same group that does Kiowa and Pebble and all that. So it's pretty cool.
Plus there's going to be a tour yardage book too.
It is going to be coming out very, very soon. I've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The caddy himself made that.
We have an inside track on that one.
Yeah. The caddy himself made that. I hope you enjoyed that, by the way. Great conversation with the caddy. Appreciate him jumping on there for a couple. You know, he's talking about the Players' Championship, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I think of the Players, he said the fifth major without being a major. That was what he said his first thoughts were. I don't think we have to haggle over whether it should be a quote-unquote major championship. I know there's a lot of things that go along with winning a major from a historical standpoint, but I don't think it has to have that designation to have the level of respect that you have for the Players' Championship. And one of the things I look back is 2015, when I think about some of my favorites. Ricky Fowler, I believe at the time, was coming in. There had been a Sports Illustrated or magazine article that came out that called Ricky Fowler the most overrated player on tour.
Right.
You remember that?
Exactly. Yep.
And there were some anonymous quotes from tour players basically saying that he somehow had an undeserved amount of commercial attention and so forth, given his winning resume or lack thereof.
Yeah, he was the poster boy for the tour.
He was pretty much every commercial he was out there, right? And yet he hadn't really won a lot. And so that was some of the discussion. Well, he used that a bit as fuel. That's great locker room material for a guy. And he goes out there and he's five shots back with six to play on the final day. Ooh. And he played the final six holes in six under par to get into a playoff with Sergio Garcia and Kevin Kisner.
Mm.
Bob, he went birdie, par, birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie. Are you kidding me? And gets into a playoff. They go round after the three-hole aggregate, and Kiz and Fowler were still tied. So they go back to 17 for sudden death. And, of course, Ricky sticks it to 5 feet and makes another birdie on that hole to knock Kiz out and win the Players' Championship. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, three times. And a lot of what the caddy said about the preview for next week is that those last three holes, you got a par five, which has water all down the right side on the second shot. If you hit the ball in the fairway, you got a good opportunity to hit it on the green and have an opportunity to make an eagle, or if not at the worst, a birdie. I've seen guys hit it in the middle of the green there and the ball still goes off the green into the water.
Oh.
So it's crazy. It's a phenomenal hole. Then you got 17, which only plays 140 yards or something like that, maybe even closer. And, you know, the tendency for guys to hit it in the water there. But Ricky that day, he made birdie three times on that hole in that day. Once during the aggregate,
once in regulation.
When they came back, and once in regulation. So three times. And then
twice in the playoff. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, 17 is always a critical hole. I think back to 2001 where we heard the quote, better than most, and Tiger making that putt on the on the 17th hole in the third round. And from the upper shelf all the way down the hill and to that front pin placement, which was an awesome call. So there's just a lot that happens. And then 18, you got to really stripe it down the middle to have a chance to get on the green and have a birdie chance. But a lot of guys are just trying to make par there. And the natural bailout is to the right, away from the water. So those final three holes are amazing and are great to crown a champion.
Yeah, you got to talk about risk reward, right? You got it there. By the way, on 16, I know you caddied there. Didn't you caddy? You caddied in Players, didn't you? Did you not?
Caddied in two or three of them.
Okay. Did your guy go for it every time on 16? Like, is 16 an auto go in your mind? Or is it, I mean, unless you're in the bunk, unless you hit it in a bad spot or you don't have, if you're in the middle of the fairway, is it a go for two auto?
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. And, you know, the natural bailout is to the left in one of those bunkers down the left side or whatever, or on the left edge of the green. But you have, it's, if you're going to go for it, it's mandatory to hit it in the fairway. And if you miss it one side or the other in the rough, of course, it's going to be a difficult shot to lay it up to the left to keep it in play, to have a wedge shot in so that you can have an opportunity to make birdie. So it's difficult, but if you're in the fairway, as far as guys are hitting it now, it's an auto go. Absolutely.
So the official scorecard for the Players Championship listed it at 7,275 yards, par 72, 36 on both sides, and 16, 17, and 18 play is a 523 yard par five, right? So you got guys that are hitting it down there 300 yards. It leaves you with, you know, you're in that 220 or 200. You're probably somewhere between 200 and 220 out there, right?
Right.
And so, or maybe 200 to 240, depending on how you hit it. So that's pretty much a goes on. I mean, what are guys hitting down in Florida? What are you hitting a 220 shot? I mean,
I think guys are hitting
five iron.
Probably
six
five
iron,
iron.
Six iron, maybe?
Yeah, five iron, six iron, something like that. But then the wind comes into play. A lot of times you got the wind off the right, or you got it coming from the left, pushing it to the right towards the water. So then it becomes, you know, even though you've got a mid to low iron or pretty much a mid iron into that green, it still becomes pretty difficult unless there's no wind, and then guys can just go at it.
17 measures 137 on the card.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, it's wedged to maybe, again, depending on the wind, could be nine, could be more.
Yeah.
18, 462-yard par four. I would take on the 523-yard par five more than I'd want to take on the 462-yard par four 18th.
Yeah, just because of the water down the left-hand side and how crucial it is to get the ball in the fairway. And we've seen guys that have won there, Justin Thomas, Tiger Woods, a lot of those guys will take a 3-wood off the tee and shape it and get it in and get it working with the fairway. And then you got a guy like Fred Funk, who is not a long hitter, but very, very accurate, who lined it up right over the water and cut it right back into the fairway. Those guys that hit that little fade. So it's, there's a lot of ways to, you know, knock it down, and especially off the tee, but the tee ball is critical on that hole.
Yeah, and again, like I was saying, the 18th bends, so not only do you keep it out of the water, but you got to be careful not to blow it through into the trees on the other side, right?
Exactly.
So that also
becomes, and then it becomes almost a layup if you get blocked out by those trees.
Yeah,
and then you've got to pitch the ball close to be able to have a chance to make par.
Scottie Scheffler shot 17 under, 1 by 5. Terrell Hatton finished five shots back at 12 under par, shot 7 under in that final round. That was actually really fun to watch. Tom Hoagie, 10 under par in the third round, but could only muster. So he opened up with 6 over, went 4 under, 10 under, and then 2 under in the final round. And he tied with Victor Hovland there, tied for third. Hideki Matsuyama, by the way, finished 5th. At 9, and Matsuyama's been playing some really good golf this year. So watch out for Matsuyama as we get closer to. I think, wasn't that the caddy's early call for the Masters, was Matsuyama with a repeat, with a second win?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah,
with a second win. I think you're right. So no, but you look at a list of the players that have won there. You've got Ricky Fowler, you've got Martin Keimer, Tiger Woods, Matt Kuchar, Rory, Webb Simpson, Justin Thomas, Cameron Smith, Scottie Scheffler, Davis Love the third, Sergio, Phil, you know, there are phenomenal players. David Duval, Justin Leonard, Fred Couples, a lot of great players that have won here at the Players Championship.
All right, there you go. By the way, Rory missed the cut last year. Remember, John Rahm had to withdraw after the first round. So, and then Rory McIlroy missed the cut. So, yeah, pretty interesting stuff. Players Championship coming up next week. After this week, they play, of course, Bay Hill, which is and always, you know, it's unfortunate that we lose these great legends, and Mr. Palmer's not going to be sitting there to shake hands, but it's cool. I did see some video from earlier in the week that they still have his umbrella, you know, that multicolor umbrella that's such a signature for his logo sitting there on the end of the range. And, you know, that's pretty neat, the homage that they pay to him this week. Now, this is one of the signature events that has a cut. So Tigers, Arnold's and Jack's events the eight, or the three of the eight signature events that actually have a cut. Only 69 players playing this week. Tony Finau, the only eligible player this week that is not playing, which is kind of interesting. Puerto Rico is also playing this week. $4 million is the entire purse, where at Bay Hill, $4 million goes to the winner. It's a $20 million purse. So next week, by the way, $45 million per, or $25 million. So between the 2 weeks, if you're playing Arnold Palmer and then the players, you're playing for $45 million in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and you win. You go back-to-back winning, you win $8 million.
you're gonna be more than four. You'll be probably $5 million for the players. So, yeah, you'd be back nine. Yeah.
Like yeah.
Nine. Yeah, it's tough. Hey, you know what? Let's get over to this. The PGA Tour announced their board of governors.
Mm-hmm.
And the establishment of the PGA Tour Enterprises Board of Directors, I should say, was announced. It's a 13-member board of directors that's been established for the recently launched PGA Tour Enterprises, and it's effective immediately. This new board is comprised of 9 PGA Tour directors approved by the PGA Tour Policy Board and 4 Strategic Sports Group, the SSG directors, appointed by the SSG Investment Group, and they will lead all commercial activities related to the PGA Tour, and they'll focus on driving fan engagement and growth, as well as developing new media, sponsorship, and commercial opportunities. So here's all 6 current player directors, which you're talking about: Patrick Cantlay, Peter Malnati, Adam Scott, Webb Simpson, Jordan Spieth, and Tiger Woods. In addition, they felt like they needed somebody else that could serve as a liaison between both boards, a player. So they went out to a previous player, former player, Joe Ogilvy, joins that PGA Tour Policy Board and the PGA Tour Enterprises Board of Directors for that director liaison position. So that's interesting. People have often said Joe Ogilvy's like super smart and really good with numbers and all that kind of thing. So they've tapped him to kind of represent that. Let's see.
Kind of the business mind. You know, he was the guy that when he would get to the golf course in the morning, he was looking at the stock page and all that kind of thing. So Joe Ogilvy, as far as a player is concerned, was a guy that a lot of guys went to about stock tips and all that kind of stuff. So he's very knowledgeable with the business aspect, and having been a former player that has won on tour, one event, it's a great fit for him.
How about this, by the way? Jay Monahan will serve as chief executive officer of the enterprises, and Tiger Woods will serve as vice chairman of the board. And when I read that, I couldn't help but thinking, so Tiger Woods is vice chairman of the board of PGA Tour Enterprises, and Phil Mickelson, well, he's the owner of the old High Flyers over there on LIV. I mean, sorry, but
come on.
We could have found a way to work this thing out. You didn't. I mean, which title would you rather have right now? Go ahead. Come at me and tell me how much that High Flyers franchise is going to be worth here in a few years. Go ahead. Tell me how much it's going to be worth versus this new PGA Tour Enterprises, of which Tiger is the vice chairman of the board. I'd say he's set up all right. By the way, here's some of the SSG. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's part of the transitioning, I think, of Tiger away from playing a lot of tournaments and competitive golf on the PGA Tour. You know, he'll get his share and he'll play his share over the next little bit, but and some on the PGA Tour Champions as well. But this is kind of more of the business aspect and business side and being vice chairman. So.
Well, he joins, how about this group, right, from SSG? You've got you've got John W. Henry, principal of Fenway Sports Group, right? He's also, you have Arthur Blank, course, who owns the Atlanta Falcons and the Mercedes-Benz Stadium and all that kind of thing, plus PGA Tour Superstore. Andrew B. Cohen, Chief Investment Officer and co-founder of Cohen Private Adventures, or Private Ventures, and he's also the Vice Chairman of the New York Mets. And then Sam Kennedy, who's the president and CEO of the Boston Red Sox, and who's the partner and CEO for Fenway Sports Group. So this is, look, you got the Red Sox, the Mets, the Falcons, you know, all of these kinds of guys that are in there that are going to help. So I'm interested to see where all this shakes out, but it sounds like a pretty heavy, heavy hitting group there.
Yeah, and the PGA Tour is forging ahead while they're waiting to, while they're still in discussions with the PIF and, you know, that framework agreement and that kind of thing. So it'll be interesting how this or how this will change should that agreement get done, and they're going to need some representation on the board as well.
Hey, the last thing I wanted to, before we end here, lack of big names winning on the PGA Tour, that was kind of been bantered around. Do you think that's an issue that you have some of the new players that we haven't heard of and a lot of the big names not winning so far this year?
Well, I think that's the thing about the game of golf is that you have this new influx of blood coming through the system, and I think it's great. You know, as far as the big name players, it could be that they're focusing only on the signature events, so they have less amount of time to win golf tournaments, and they're playing against each other, beating each other up. But it's also getting close to the Masters, and guys are preparing for that, and the major season.
I like some of the new up-and-comers. I mean, you got Nick Dunlap, you got Matthew Pavone, you've got Nick Taylors, you know, Jake Knapp, you know, that are in there. But Hideki Matsuyama, obviously a major champion. Austin Eckroat winning last week. So, yeah, would like to see some of these big names jump in and get a dub for sure. Thanks to Dave Glauser, our producer, for Bob Casper. I'm Brian Taylor. Hey, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week right here on Real Golf Radio.